Welcome along. It's a bit of a bleary-eyed podcast this morning because it was Super Bowl last night, and Terry's a big fan of the old American rugby, and I've got into it. I stayed up last night.
Does your son like it as well?
He does. So he can tell you all. He can have a proper conversation with him about it. But you want to watch Patrick Mahomes? He's great. And honestly, it's like he's chucking a live trout. Not a controller. We had that ball, and it was. Oh, it's going to be close. No one can call it. It's 24-0. 24-0, and then Kendrick Lamar comes on and starts rapping about some other rapper being a paedophile. To be fair, I nodded off at half time, and then I woke up and I was like, what? What's happened now?
It's been one of those weekends. I did a post on X last night and added up all the games of football that I've watched since Friday night. I forgot about Thursday. I'm sure I watched something on Thursday night as well. It's been relentless. And to finish off last night, I did a podcast at 8 o'clock this morning as well for TalkSport about the FA Cup round this weekend. So, I went to bed about 3:30. It's actually my heaviest weight of the year is always the day after the Super Bowl. I kind of attack it after Christmas and think, well, I'm going to lose the few pounds I put on at Christmas.
Do you snack like you're an American sports fan?
Totally. Right, okay. I did tailgating last night. I posted a picture that I did a barbecue about 6 o'clock last night to prepare my wings and hot dogs. And then I snacked as I went through the night with the popcorn and the sweets. And Diet Coke just to get me through the night. So it's been a relentless week. Honestly, the games I've watched this week, it's not healthy. I can promise you it isn't healthy. I mean, the English FA Cup round, and I watched all the Spanish
Copa
stuff.
So that's what you did Thursday night? You're watching Copa
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's what it was. So I need to start getting healthier. I try my best, though. But as I say, I always weigh myself this week and think, oh, Super Bowl, it's killed me. And then I start to lose weight again. So I come off the back of Christmas thinking, that was a few pounds I've put on. I'll try and shake them off. I do go to the gym. And then as we get to late January and I'm thinking, well, the Super Bowl's early February, I can snack out until then. Then I'll start again. So the podcast listeners can look forward to a new, slimmer version.
Yes.
In the weeks ahead, now the NFL season has finished. It does help my weekend schedule that I don't have to stay up till God knows whatever hour watching games in the playoffs that I shouldn't be doing. And the Super Bowl was good, but it was disappointing in terms of it wasn't competitive, unlike most of the games we saw in La Liga this weekend.
Nice segue, but especially the Madrid derby on Saturday night. We've had a few one-alls in this game, so I suppose we shouldn't see it as a huge surprise. Paul Campbell is our most communicative Atletico Madrid fan. I think most Atleti fans would have taken a draw, but I'm not impressed. I'm not best impressed, he says. I thought Real were far better, especially considering their situation, whereas we had a full-strength team but rarely dictated any play. Poor from Atleti winners, and we only scored from a questionable penalty. Harsh but fair. Is that from an Atleti fan?
I agree totally. I think they would have taken a draw. First half was where they let themselves down, I thought. I thought they were much better. Real Madrid, I haven't looked at the stats. I'm not that bothered, actually. I watch it myself and I can add it up. And I thought probably Real Madrid shaded it in terms of possession, but Atleti were so wasteful with their attacking play. So wasteful. And Real Madrid were there for the taking. And it's obvious to see why. You've got back four, Lucas Vasquez, Tchouaméni, Raul Asensio, and at the weekend, Fran Garcia. So one recognised first-choice player, maybe Fran Garcia. I would, at the moment, favour over Ferland Mondi anyway.
Yeah.
But Tchouaméni's not a centre-back. Asensio is making his way in the game, and Lucas Vasquez is a weakness. And they had the opportunities. There was one, though. Just an example. Semolina was racing through on goal. Griezmann went on an overlap. It was a straightforward little tap into Griezmann on the overlap. It would have been a one-on-one against Courtois, and Lino overhit it and ran out of play. That happens. There was four or five possibilities that Atletico Madrid could have scored if they tidied up their attacking play. I thought there was at least three goals in it for Atletico Madrid, particularly when they go ahead and Real Madrid have to throw even more at it, because you knew there was going to be a comeback from a response from Real Madrid. It took until the second half, but it was a game of two halves. I thought Atleti wasted their opportunities in the first half, and then Real Madrid came out on fire at the start of the second half. Good old-fashioned rollicking at half-time team talk. They upped their game, upped the tempo, and that's when Atleti found it hard to deal with. And then I thought the substitutions from Simeone were disappointing, because he relinquished any attacking play down the left. Galan and Samuelino were replaced by Ronaldo, and Pablo Barrios ended up playing left-side midfield, so Vasquez didn't have any defending to do. So went and pitched himself up in the attacking half of the pitch.
Mm.
And you kind of gave away the advantage of playing against a player who isn't an official right-back. But it wasn't a problem then for Real Madrid. They were pouring forward. And probably on the second-half performance, they were the more likely team to win the game. Bellingham was playing more advanced. It's going to be interesting to see how Real Madrid pitch it against Manchester City, because I don't think they can defend with the defenders they have available. But their front four, and Rodrigo, who's kind of and Rodrigo, he was their best player. He was their best attacking player. Bellingham played well in the second half, and Mbappe, they're all good. Vinicius was a bit quieter than normal, I have to be honest. Yeah, that didn't have that much of an impact on the game, but Rodrigo was brilliant. We kind of overlook him and think he isn't the superstar, but he's a wonderful player. But in general terms, in the level of the game, technically, the one-touch passing, retaining possession under real genuine pressure, it was an elite game of football, I have to be honest.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Yeah.
You do see it. They ping it about, they knock it about, they're under pressure, they can play one-touch, they can play around the corner. Defenders were excellent at last-ditch defending from both teams. But I just thought in that first half, Atleti had two or three goals in them. But they didn't. And they didn't take those chances. They actually scored just from a penalty. And in the second half, they didn't make the most of playing against a weakened back four, which is a worry for Real Madrid. Alaba's out for a month. I didn't realise that. I knew he wasn't involved in the week, and I thought, why is that? Maybe they're being careful with him, but he's out for a month with a different injury.
This is always going to happen when a guy of his age has had such a long time out. It's always, they never come back smoothly.
No, it's a muscle injury, an adductor injury, so I think he's going to be out for a month. So this pain that they're going through with the defence is going to continue. And it might hamper their season. So Real Madrid have just got to go for goals. And their best form of defence is attack, because they'll put fear into opponents, and opponents won't be able to play, at the level that Atletico Madrid probably should have done at the weekend. Can you play on the counter-attack against Real Madrid?
It's an interesting one against City, isn't it? Because, I mean, literally, if you'd asked this time last year, you'd have said, oh, best two teams in Europe. Wouldn't for City now, but in that old heavyweight kind of way, you're always slightly afraid, aren't you, of an old heavyweight catching you with a punch. So,
oh, totally.
There's a massive danger there for Real Madrid.
Yeah, Haaland is the danger. I mean, if there's anyone that's going to apply that finishing touch that Atleti couldn't do at the weekend, it would be Erling Haaland. It might be a Kevin De Bruyne. Mm-hmm. It might be Savinho. They've got the talent there. I'm predicting a high-scoring two-legged affair, which probably is the norm for those two teams anyway.
Yeah.
So I think it's a problem for Real Madrid, though.
I'll give you the stats, even though you didn't want them, because we'll learn something, Terry. So you watch the game and then look at the stats, and then you can decide if the stats make sense. 60-40 possession, Real Madrid.
Yep.
XG, 1.72 to 1.47. It's about right, isn't it?
Yep.
Shots, 23 to 10. Shots on target, 9 to 1.
One,
yeah,
that's poor from Atleti. They were wasteful.
Yeah,
had some really good opportunities and they didn't make the most of. Where they were on the break, they're outnumbering opponents. I thought Griezmann was the best player on the pitch by a mile in the first half, but we started getting that positional changing frenzy from Simeone that we haven't had lately, and they've been good. But Marcus Llorente ended up playing three or four positions, and likewise Griezmann in the end ended up as a left-sided midfield player. So it was one of those days where Simeone, I have to be honest, lost his nerve a bit. And at 1-0 up, had a different attitude at 1-1. The attitude was, we're not going to get beat, which probably before the game, you're probably thinking a point, a draw, wouldn't be a bad result for Atletico Madrid. But I think they had the potential there to take all three.
Yeah, we have to talk about referees, Terry, because contractually obliged when we're discussing Real Madrid. They, if I'd got up earlier and written an intro, it would have been something along the lines of La Liga deliberately biting back against Real Madrid after giving them so much grief in the week. Get your opinion on Real Madrid's behaviour as an institution, and then the penalty, which I think it's very soft, put it that way.
Yeah, first of that, I addressed that. I didn't think it was a penalty because I don't think that Samuelino was impeded from getting the ball. I don't think it was a foul. There was slight contact. Lino does the modern thing where he stays down long enough for the referee and VAR to think, oh, something must have happened. There was no way he was injured. There's minimal contact from Tchouaméni. The ball's going past both of them. It's gone past both of them. It's a coming together. It's a bit of contact. So I personally wouldn't have given a foul and a penalty for that. But regarding Real Madrid's behaviour, yes, the Carlos Romero incident the week before should have been a red card, but it wasn't. And they made a big song and dance about it, claiming that they're treated unfairly. I promise you, John, that big three in La Liga don't get treated unfairly by officials. There might be controversial moments between the games between them, between each other. Real Madrid have had 10 penalties this season. That was the first one they've had against them. So I'm sure there are teams in La Liga that have a genuine grievance about the way that referees have officiated their games, but they'll be down towards the bottom of the table. There'll be the smaller clubs, the smaller fan bases. It's human nature that you always feel that you're the team that's hardest done by. I promise you, Real Madrid so they shouldn't be going on the with some sort of campaign about how harshly they're treated by referees, and it's public and it's on their television station, and they make a big deal about who's getting games, who's the referee is for the games that are coming up. It shouldn't be a newspaper story that, oh, this referee has got this game, and then they refer to any decision he's made in the past that has gone against Real Madrid. It's got to stop.
Yeah.
It really has, and they shouldn't feel aggrieved. They've got nothing to feel aggrieved about. But this wasn't a penalty, I don't think.
No. I'll read you a couple of messages from Jackie, who's one of our Patreons. How good was the Madrid derby? Says, a game of exceptional quality and intensity, breathless pace, everything done with consummate skill. Remarkable how much Fran Garcia has improved. It's interesting. Clearly always a very good player, but now presents almost as a left-back version of Carvajal, as quite recently remarked by Terry. Lots of standouts for Atletico too. Depaul, top of his game. Alvarez has been a world-class player. To compliment Griezmann, Atletico had been missing for years. However, he had sent us one just after the Friday one, right, in which he says, as a self-loathing, nominal Real Madrid fan, I think their long-running campaign against referees and the refereeing body, mainly via Real Madrid TV, and most recently the letter they presented to the Federation, is pretty ugly stuff. Refereeing in Spain is far from perfect, but referees are the softest targets, and the faux moral outrage is surely just a smokescreen and a means of coercion. And then I think Medina Cantalejo is doing a good job, honest job, and doesn't deserve a public assault like that. I really appreciate the football excellence that Real Madrid is able to consistently achieve, but the institutional bullying hubris led me to emotionally divest years ago.
Yeah, they should be above that, Real Madrid. They're the biggest club in the world, and everything they do gets attention. And when they do something like that, that would happen this week, and just because they lost against Espanyol, I mean, it's the media as well. The media, in some of the papers, there is a bias towards Real Madrid. Hmm. Not just the Madrid teams, it's Real Madrid. It's a lot of pages they have to fill. It's something that they should be above, to be honest. Because as I say, they don't get treated harshly by referees. They don't, literally, they don't. There's big clubs in all leagues, don't.
Yeah. That said, I agree with you. It's such a soft penalty. When you start thinking through the consequences of some of these clampdowns and refereeing changes, you start thinking, so hang on, how are we going to play the game? Because It's just contact. It's like every bit of contact. Like, as you say, not challenging for the ball at the time. He's trying
he
to
didn't kick
intercept it,
him,
and his foot
didn't
goes
trip
down.
him, didn't push him. It wasn't a foul, in
His
my
foot goes
opinion.
down, and he does catch Lino just on the side of his foot. He'd have felt it and thought, "Oh, hang on, this is now we go down. Now we live in the VAR world." And if you know, what do you do as a defender to not do that? You don't try and intercept the ball. You don't jump. You don't do all the things that you have to do to defend.
There was a very similar one in the Athletic Girona game as well, which led to a penalty. It was almost identical, where you're looking and thinking, well, where's the penalty here? Oh, for that, it's very similar. And as you say, we've become accustomed now to defenders closing people down with their arms behind their back. What's going to be next to avoid making contact with an opponent in the box? It's
Shuffling around with your feet together.
Absolutely ridiculous. Keeping your feet on the ground so you're not out of control. It's I thought it was a soft penalty, I have to be honest.
Let's just quickly talk about Athletic Club. They won 3-0. Sunset with a hat trick. Was it his first senior hat trick? Do I remember that
No,
from the
I think it's his
weekend?
third, I
Oh,
read.
is it? Oh, right. Okay. All right. Okay. Fair
So
enough.
yeah, he's hugely important to
It's
them.
his best season, isn't it? That he's had. He's really developed as a player. So him, obviously, one of them was a penalty, but other than that, I mean, they're in the title race because they're 6 points off the
Totally.
top, aren't they?
Exactly. They're 4 points off of Barcelona. We shouldn't rule them out. Highly unlikely that they're going to win the title. The race is between them and Villarreal for fourth, probably, realistically. But out of respect, if we were talking about one of the big three being 4 points off the top, off of Barcelona, we wouldn't be ruling them out of the race. If it was Barcelona in Athletic's position, we wouldn't be saying now they're out of the race. So, it's a big win. Girona have shown signs of improvement. They're now not in Europe, so they've just got to concentrate on La Liga. They can be a decent team, but Athletic were just too much, too powerful. They're irresistible in this game, and Sunset was the star of the match. He's a fine player, really is. When he's in form, playing that number 10 role, he makes such a difference to the team.
Barcelona are also very much in the title race. They've scored, Terry, since the new year, scored 41 goals.
It's ridiculous.
And we're still early February, aren't we? So they went to Sevilla. They only got four. And having taken an early lead, but with Sevilla scored Vargas, it wasn't one-way traffic, but you always had the feeling that they were too good.
Kind of, but there was a Sevilla put up more of a fight than I thought they would. And there was the quick response with the goal from Vargas, and you kind of
A
for
ludicrously quick response, in fact, wasn't it? And also
for the
Barca's defending.
television
Show less replays, fellas. I mean, come on. So,
game's kicked off goal and we saw the end of it. It was ridiculously quick. And it was a little bit tricky after that. I'm looking at when the second goal came. It was after half time.
Well, it looked like, because he scored immediately after coming on at half time, didn't he, Fermín López? And then I mean, I thought it was offside, but they scored, inverted commas, immediately again, didn't they? Sevilla. And at that point, you think, well, if that's gone in,
Yes.
it's, yeah, yeah, it's,
It was two offsides on that one.
So I
The
thought,
severe
yeah,
one.
I, and I, yeah, you sort of clocked them, didn't you?
Not initially, I didn't. Maybe the
You're not, all right.
second one, the
I was
last
thinking,
one
oh, I don't know, they looked
might have been.
offside.
I didn't know Luca Bacchio was that was close. He was offside, and then eventually, when the ball does go in, it was clearly twice offside.
But they take massive gambles, Barcelona, don't they? That when they're trying to play offside when, I mean, the pass comes from like 2 yards inside the Sevilla half with no particular pressure on the ball,
No
and
pressure.
they're still trying to run.
The other
Iñigo
way.
Martinez is still running outwards, isn't he? And so you think, mate, that's too big a gamble, isn't it?
It is, but it's leading to them
I suppose they do
playing,
it. Yeah.
scoring goals and
Yeah.
catching teams offside. It's high risk. It's working to a degree that when it didn't work, it was that period that they had where they weren't scoring the goals and they were struggling to break down teams and pack defences. But when they've played like this for the majority of the season, they are prolific in front of goal. They have goal scorers all over the pitch. They have players that are top level players, attacking players that are at the top of their game. I mean, Lewandowski gets the first. It's a classic Lewandowski goal.
It's a great finish, isn't it?
They're searching for a second. They weren't creating an abundance of chances. They weren't missing loads of chances. And at half time, they make the change. Gabby going off. I mean, Lopez coming on immediately. He makes a difference in terms of he's a different player to Gabby. He's getting the nod over Dani Olmo, which is kind of a sort of eyebrows raised that, the same player, basically. Dani Olmo could be doing that, but Fermín López, his form has been so good lately that Hansi Flick thinks, no, I'm going to put him on. He had an explosive 20 minutes,
Yes,
15
he made
minutes.
an imp well, he's only on 15, wasn't he? Came on half time, got sent off at 60, having scored. So,
So, and it was a reckless tackle. I think we've worked it. It's the only sending off this weekend, and it was a red card. When you see it, initially you're thinking that's reckless. Let's have a look at the slow motion, see how much damage he could have caused. Yeah, it was warranted.
yeah,
And
agreed. He could have broken his leg, is what he could have done, isn't it? So,
not like him. I mean, he just came on full of enthusiasm, full of adrenaline, scores a goal. His head's in the clouds. He's lost control of a challenge, and his desire to win the ball back quickly got the better of him, and he slides in, he's out of control. There wasn't anything particularly malicious about it, but it was a reckless challenge. So that was the. And then you're thinking, well, they've got an issue here. I think when he gets sent off, Rafinha had scored. So there were three run up. But Sevilla, you think, against 10 men, would they ever go for it, but they just weren't capable in the end. And it's a tough season for Sevilla. They made life difficult for an hour in this game, but when Rafinha gets the third, even with 10 men, Barcelona still looked as if they had a m man more. And it was a surprise to see Eric Garcia score because it's Eric Garcia, but it wasn't a surprise even with 10 men to see Barcelona get fourth. So he's become useful, wasn't Eric Garcia, for Barcelona in terms of where he plays, the positions he can play. I criticised him in the past, and I was reluctant to because he was still young. He got kind of pushed forward, club and country, Man City and Barcelona, probably quicker than he should have done, than his ability merited. But now I look at him and I think, yeah, he's only still early 20s and he can play a few different positions. He's dependable, he's reliable, he's decent on the ball, looks an intelligent player, and he's become more than useful for Hansi Flick.
Yes. And now Barcelona don't have a game till next Monday, do they? Because obviously they're through in the Champions League. So we'll see. I mean, you never know, do you? You never put your finger on how much an advantage it is having those two midweeks clear. But the clubs talk about it a lot, don't they? The managers, the players. So,
Yeah, I think it is. I tried a week's training. It's not just a physical thing. It's getting back on track with your fundamentals, your principles, your team shape, your pattern of play at a slower pace because you haven't got to do it because we've only got 2 days before we got the next game. You're probably, when you've got those games coming thick and fast, you're recovering for one match, preparing for the next one only. Whereas this, if you do get a period of during this season where you get 2 midweeks free, that's 10 days of training you can do where you can get a bit of fitness stuff in. You can practice and rehearse your team shape and your team plans. So I think it's valuable. It's not long enough to go to lose rhythm either. Which if you go 2 weeks without a game, that might be a touch too much, but I think a 3 week, 2 weeks on the trot is a benefit. We'll see though.
Monday night game next week for Barcelona. Obviously, we're not doing the Monday night. We'll look at the Monday night game. We'll pick it up with the Patreons after we have obviously talked about the Champions League in a week.
Yeah, we're showing that on ITV. It's one of the games I've
Yeah,
got,
next
the
Monday.
Barcelona Rayo game.
Las Palmas 1, Villarreal 2. Almost a dramatic comeback with Ollie McBurnie still looking for his first goal. I mean, he works hard, doesn't he? And he
Desperate for him.
Gives it everything. And he's this overhead kick, a spectacular overhead kick, and he caught it. And it smashed against the crossbar, didn't it? Right at the end.
He should have
So.
scored one in the first half as well. He had a really good chance, but couldn't take that. And then Las Palmas probably deserved to draw in this match. But it's a tricky period for them. The great start from Diego Martinez. Now the wheels have fallen off, and they're getting dragged back into the relegation battle. They have had some tricky fixtures lately, but you lose confidence as quick as you gain confidence, and at the moment their confidence is on the wane. But I would love to see McBurnie score. You know, he's as you said, he's become a cult hero at Les Palmas, and recently he hasn't been playing. Fabio Silva's been the chosen striker, and he's been good. He's been scoring goals. So under the new manager, it hasn't gone well personally for Ollie McBurnie. It has for the team to a degree. And he got an opportunity this week, but couldn't take it. But I'm keen to... Scott McKenna's been good. Ollie McBurnie is, as I say, become a cult hero at Las Palmas. Probably the supporters wasn't sure what they were getting, but they're getting they've got a really wholehearted player, works hard for the team. And everybody's keen for him to get his first goal for Las Palmas in La Liga. But that was a tough result for Las Palmas at the weekend. That pressure at the end when McBurnie hits the bar would have been a spectacular goal. They probably deserved the draw, but Iosi Perez, his goals per minute ratio. I haven't had time, and it's something I will look at. It must be the best in La Liga. Because he barely played and he keeps scoring every time he plays, he scores.
Right, keep
but it's
talking.
Coming off the
bench,
I'll
look it up.
And he's kind of went under the radar with the transfer in the first place, and then we questioned it and thought, when you look at Betis, why have they sold him for 4 million? He obviously wanted to go. I'm not even entirely sure why you would be desperate to leave Betis to go to Villarreal. Money, I guess. Maybe a longer contract at the stage of his career might have been an attraction. But there's not a massive discrepancy between playing for Betis and playing for Villarreal. Both should be aiming for European spots. Maybe you could argue Betis have got a better fan base, bigger fan base, and a better atmosphere in their home stadium than Villarreal's. And when he's been missing this year, he's been missed by Villarreal. And when he plays, you go, oh, he scored. He must have been playing again. It's astonishing how he's done this season. There can't be a better value transfer anywhere than Iosi Perez.
Yeah, I can't find exactly goals per minute. So I can give you, he's second in loads of things, basically. Goals per shot on target, he's second. 0.83 is quite incredible. He's only had 12 shots on target this season. And he scored 10 goals.
Yeah.
But Aitor Paredes scored with all of his shots on target this season. It's quite bizarre, isn't it? 3 out of 3. Let's have a look at...
That'll be set pieces as well.
Yeah.
Where he's gone up.
Yeah.
Centre-back for Athletic Club.
Shots per 90. No prizes for Mbappe winning that one.
Yeah.
Goals per shot. Pablo Duran, 5, and he's already had 4 shots. Perez is second in that. So he's let's have a look at the finishing, the G minus XG, so goals compared to your XG. He's second in that with a plus 4.2, which is good. But Sandro Ramirez, because he scored a couple of spectacular ones, hasn't he, Sandro Ramirez? So and then Valverde's third. So, yeah, and in total goals scored, obviously, were Lewandowski still from Mbappe, and then Budimir, Rafinha, Sanset, Ayoze Perez, so and then Kike. So he's overtaken Kike, hasn't he? Oh, he's pulled
top
away.
Top Spaniard scorer in La Liga.
Zara award. Yeah.
So that's a big win for Villarreal. They're on the, the track chasing the 4 points behind the Athletic Club.
Yeah.
The must win game for them.
Yeah. Sorted themselves out, haven't they? From
the
really stumbling pre-Christmas.
Yeah. And they're conceding goals.
Yeah.
They could have conceded more in this one, but they got away with it. Good finish from Alex Baena and Osi Perez with another goal to complete the give him a 2-0 lead, and Manifusta replied with an 84th minute, and then it was backs to the wall stuff of Vieira, and they managed to hold on.
Yeah. Who else needs to sort themselves out, Terry? Is Betis.
Yes.
2-0 up against Celta Vigo. Anthony had scored a really really clever little finish. Really, I really like that goal. Not spectacular, not the spectacular Anthony goal that I'm sort of predicting that he'll try to do all the time. He just threaded it through a crowded penalty area. And they're 2-0 up with an hour played, and they lose the game to Celta Vigo.
This was an enjoyable game. I mean, it was even, to be honest, but Betis took their two chances. Anthony was probably given too much time in the 18-yard box to pick his spot, if I'm being honest. I question Celta's, not ambitions, but decision making on letting half a dozen players leave that have all played in the first team this season. I question that. And when they were 2-0 down, I was thinking, they've dug a hole for themselves here. They ended up the game with 10 academy players that had come through their academy out of the 16 players that were used. Admittedly, one of those is Borja Iglesias, who started there, went on his travels, and is now back at the club. He was doing his best to wind up his teammates, his ex-teammates, the club that he's actually, I think he's on loan from, Betis to Celta. There was quite a bit of aggro towards the end of the game that he was heavily involved in. But Celta, once they got that first goal, Betis crumbled. And they had no attacks whatsoever after that, Betis. They kept giving the ball away cheaply, asking for trouble. Fran Beltran with the first goal, which was the crucial one. It gave them a lifeline back into the game. 63rd minute. And a couple of minutes later, Javi Rodriguez gets one. And then Viljetts Fedberg. So they're thrilling to watch, Celta, at home. They score goals. They're dynamic. They're young. They're enthusiastic, energetic. And they found a way to claw back something from this game, which ultimately led to them taking an unlikely 3 points. I mean, to get back to 2-2, the crowd were going, love this. The atmosphere at that stadium there is improved so much. I get why they stood there in front of their supporters for 10 minutes after the game, taking the adulation from the fans. No one left the stadium after the game. It was a sight to see, to be honest. Everybody at that club is pulling together. And this is the route they're going. They're happy to let those players leave. They're happy Claudio Giraldez knows the young players that are coming through. That's the way they want to go. It's to be applauded if it works. If they keep away from any relegation issues, which they should do now. And taking the applause at the end of the game, I get. We're going to Alaves in a minute, who just stood there, took 10 minutes of kind abuse from their fans. They've just lost at home to Getafe. I'm not sure. I don't get this new thing of standing in front. No one's doing anything. I get it if you've won, like Celta,
yeah,
and a famous comeback. Alaves, just the players just stood their hands on their hips, facing. They're in the penalty box, standing on the edge of the, looking at the few supporters that were left.
Yeah,
most of this crowd had gone home, and even their supporters are looking at them, thinking, well, "What do we do here?"
Yeah, it's sort of self-flagellation, and
we're just lost,
apologising for stuff that people are feel exactly obliged to do now. Yeah, I mean, they didn't lose deliberately.
I get it if you're away team and you go over and clap your supporters. That should be done.
Yeah.
But when you've lost at home in a relegation 6 points and you lost at Getafe 1-0 and you go and stand there, as you say, it's no one knows what they're doing. The players are thinking, they're just looking at a crowd who are not singing any songs.
Yeah.
But they're not abusing them. And everyone's just, it's just like a standoff with, okay, you can go in now.
Yeah. It's like the naughty set.
Can we go? Can you go? Yeah. Who's going to go first?
Yeah, you've got to go or go and stand in the corner because you've been naughty and lost at Getafe. They lost to a penalty. Was this a penalty? Because it was a flailing arm, isn't it? In the penalty area as he jumps. So
again, it's one of those, when the penalty is given, I'm looking, it took me 2 replays to find the foul.
Yeah.
So it kind of is an arm flung out that catches an opponent.
And they do give those elsewhere. You know, elsewhere on the pitch.
Exactly.
You jump and your arm.
The point I was going to make.
Yeah.
It would have been a foul anywhere else. So, yeah, it was a soft one, unusual one. And the referee did well to spot it, to be honest. I think the referee spotted that as opposed to VAR.
Yeah.
So the referee give it. And then VAR is looking at it and probably thinking, yeah, he's got a point. We're not going to change that.
Yeah, fair enough, isn't it? A bit of lucky Alaves, but there you go.
They're
boys.
Playing okay.
Go and stand there and be told off.
Yeah, and they're playing okay, but they're not picking up any points. So that's a worry, you know. They lost just to Barcelona. They've lost just about at home against Getafe. They're suffering.
Yeah,
Alaves, well, they're same plummeting.
Anyway, Valencia. Now, we were highly critical of Valencia in the week when they conceded 12 goals in 11 days in 2 games against Barcelona, changed his team around Corberan. And we said we'd judge them, I suppose, in the game against Leganés, which was a huge game because, you know, in terms of, we'll have a look at the table in a minute. And they won it 2-0. So is everything justified?
I kind of guess so. I mean, it was a reserve team that played against Barcelona in the Copa del Rey. You're disrespecting the 30-odd thousand supporters that paid to come and watch the game that still think Valencia are a team that should be able to compete in two competitions. So that's all it is. But I kind of get the importance. We all know the importance of Valencia staying in the top division of Spanish football. So this was the first team again, and they were at it. You know, at home is that's where they're going to get their points. They still suffer away from home. Can we see an improvement in their form when they haven't got the backing of the fans who are very much, very firmly in their corner? They're very firmly with the players. So there's a good atmosphere that's conducive to Valencia playing well at home because it's a difficult place for opponents to go and play. And however poor, good, great Valencia are. And that sees them through. So their home form has been it's been decent this season. It's just away from home. Can they now reverse fortunes on their road trips? Can they pick up some goals? Can they pick up some wins away from home? This win will help them. Two unlikely goal scorers as well. I'm slightly annoyed, irritated at Unai Sadic has left Real Sociedad's bench to go and sit on Valencia's bench, and he must be sitting there thinking, "Come on." You know, there are other clubs that probably would have took him and he would have been starting in their team. That I do think they've got to try and find a way to get him in the starting lineup. Not at the expense of Hugo Lloris. I think he does well, but maybe the two of them. Let's see, maybe away from home, you could play two banks of four and leave two up front. Both hardworking. Hugo, there's no one works harder than Hugo Lloris as a centre forward in La Liga, so he'll drop in. You know, he can. They can play. They could play together. So maybe something different away from home for Valencia, where you get two strikers in. And because they relied on Christian Mosquera and Muqtada Diakabi with an emotional goal, massive injury, massive concerns about whether he would ever recover. He has, he's back in the team, and he's able to get amongst the goals at the weekend. So, a very big and emotional victory for Valencia over Leganés.
Rayo Vallecano beat Valladolid 1-0 on Friday, relatively late goal. Valladolid had some chances after that, but Rayo's form, I think it's December the 1st since they were beaten in La Liga, got knocked out of the cup. Three wins in a row, 4 out of 5 with a draw in there. It's amazing form.
Impressive, and they're fun to watch. When I mean, they're probably the one thing they lack is goals, but their work rate, hardest working team in La Liga, undoubtedly. And their players that went missing last year, Alvaro Garcia, who scores this goal, Issy Palazón, they've come back this season. I mean, it's the new coach Nico Perez last season they scraped by in terms of survival. And this season they've flourished, and you can see who, you know you can see what Raya are about, particularly at home. Valladolid were unlucky in this; they're going to go down, they're going to get relegated. I think they're the one obvious one now, but they're only just coming up short. So you know, lots of new signings. I do played at the back, one of those Celta players, Joseph I do. He's tightened things up defensively. Their form suggests they're not out of it, but the fact they've only got 15 points tells me that. They're going to have to have a massive turnaround. You look at it, 20, 25 points in the remaining games.
We'll have just one more game, and then we'll have a look at the table because we need to sort of unpick it a bit. At the bottom end, certainly. So Real Sociedad beat Espanyol by 2-1. Becker, I mean, 39 seconds, I think I counted it.
Yes.
And then they score at the very end to wrap up the win. So
Yep, penalty for Espanyol. And then Brais Mendes came on as a sub in the 81st minute, scores in the 84th minute. Always a mystery as to why he's not starting. He should be a key. When Mikel Merino left, he should have been the new leader in that midfield stroke attacking position in central midfield. But that hasn't happened. But we've seen with Real Sociedad that the chopping and changing, Alguacil was, you know, game by game, different players in attack. Geraldo Becker starts, scores. And you think, oh, before you've looked at the team, you think, oh, Geraldo Becker, oh, he's good. You're just going to think, oh, he's playing. Who's not playing? And he's a good player. So they've got the talent there, Real Sociedad. But this was struggling again. Brais Mendes coming off the bench, scoring within 3 minutes with 6 minutes to go. And Espanyol were lucky not to get a point in this game. They're going to get their points at home. I mean, we're talking about Valladolid being bottom with 15 Espanyol in the relegation fight, they've got 8 more points than Valladolid. So it tells you, you know, something about how big a task it is going to be for Valladolid to survive.
Yeah, so let's have a look at that bottom end of the table. So Valladolid 15. So yeah, I think we're pretty much saying, you know, they're 8 points from safety at the moment, 15 to play. And then Alaves 21, Valencia 22, Leganes 23, Espanyol 23, Las Palmas 23. So they're very much, that's, you know, 2 points between five clubs. Right. Now, applying you know, when we're saying that Athletic Club are in a title race because they're six behind, so if you add 6 points on to Las Palmas, you go Getafe 27, so they're definitely in a relegation zone, in relegation battle.
But they're heading in the right direction, Hetafe.
Then, so Sevilla 28, Celta Vigo 28. So you must also include Betis 29.
Betis 29, yeah.
Yeah, because they're only six. Well, they're 6 points above Leganés.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
seven above Valencia, who are the last relegation zone team. And on the form that Betis are in, if you extrapolate, if you basically always think, if you take the last five or six games and add it as that as the next five or six games, then, you know, I mean, they've got to win against Mallorca, and they got a draw against Athletic Club. So, you know,
Need
be
some
interesting
tidying
to
up
see
to
that.
do, but you're right to suggest there is potential there for those teams. I mean, the weird thing is, we're looking at Sevilla and Betis probably as unlikely candidates to get relegated. Getafe are just below them, and Getafe looking at it and thinking, we're 6 points above the relegation battle. Betis and Sevilla haven't even looked at the relegation battle. Getafe know they're in it, and now they're celebrating the fact that they got this win. It's taken them 6 points clear of relegation. And as I say, Betis and Sevilla and Celta probably haven't even looked at the table below them.
One
So it's
more.
unlikely those three get involved in it, but still got to
Right.
get another 10, 12, 14 points.
Going to throw another team at you. Mallorca, are they in a relegation battle, Terry? The case that they are, lost five games in a row. Now, okay, that included getting knocked out of the cup by Pontevedra. Tonight, they host Osasuna, which is obviously an interesting story for Arrasate, the
Arrasate.
manager, who was a very popular, successful Osasuna manager, who left for a better project. Is that what we never quite? I don't. I've quite understood, but he left. And now they're back, and they're literally the same points. Those two clubs, 30 points. So it's been no great leap forward.
No, I don't think either of those get dragged into relegation battle. In fact, I would say Osasuna have taken their eye off the ball lately because of their cup run. They placed a lot of importance on that, and they've gone out now, having lost to Real Sociedad in the last round. Could have done with a kinder draw after beating Athletic Club. So they can get back now to challenging for a European spot. Osasuna for Mallorca, I think they've had this blip, but I don't think it's anything to be too concerned about. I can't call that game this game Monday night. It's that really could go either way. And Antibudimir is ex-Mallorca as well. So it's yeah, Mallorca could, you know, it's they've got Marici, Cole Larin, so there's plenty of potential there for goals from both teams.
Yeah, there we are. And so we'll come back and have a chat about that for just the Patreons, patreon.com/LTEL, if you want to become a Patreon. Thank you to the Patreons for your continued support. Thank you for everybody for listening. Terry's off to bed, and we'll see you for another podcast soon. Bye bye.